Hello, my name is Vince Cerf. I'm Google's chief internet evangelist. And it's a real pleasure and honor to join you today. As you will know, Google has partnered with the Kosciuszko Institute for some years now, and it's been a very productive partnership. We care a great deal about the same thing, safety and security in online environments, the use of digital technology to enhance people's lives and improve the economy. So these things, among others, are part of our shared heritage and one which I treasure. One thing which I think is important for us to remember is that the internet has become an integral part of many lives, mine, yours, and others. And it's vital that we keep it open, a place where information can be shared, where information can be discovered, and information can be generated. And we're in a situation now in some parts of the world where that openness is under some threat. We'll come back to that in a bit as we walk our way through some of these concepts. One thing for sure is that the internet has shown a remarkable ability to adapt and evolve to the changing situation of our world. As we depend increasingly on digital technology, the internet has managed to keep up with some of the demand. What we are doing today, which is online interaction and working from home, has been supported in large measure by an internet which is capable of handling high-speed transmissions in both directions, not simply outbound to watch movies. So we've seen an internet that is capable of evolving, and that I think is very important because people like you are going to be driving its evolution as new demands come along. I think we can also learn a great deal from how the internet has had a role to play in the response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Where I live in Washington, D.C., I've been in this same room that you're seeing me in. It's down in my basement. For the last 6 months, I haven't traveled at all, whereas normally I'd travel about 3 weeks out of four. But I have been going all around the world with the click of a mouse. And so I might go to Australia and then Austria and be home in time for dinner. And there is something to like about that, even though a face-to-face meeting and sharing a good bottle of wine is certainly attractive, and this sort of video conferencing is no substitute. Nonetheless, the internet has really kept up. It has been vital to allow students to go to school when they have to stay at home. It's allowed many people who are in the information and communications technology disciplines to work from home. And that, I think, has been a very important part of the response that our societies have been able to make to COVID-19, to say nothing about the information that's available on the internet to help us cope with this really terrible pandemic. One thing I have learned in my visits to Poland and other Central European and Eastern European countries is the remarkable ability of its workforce to address highly technical problems. It's a very, very strong environment, educational environment. You have a remarkably well-prepared workforce to deal with online problems, to deal with the application of information technology and adaptation that is required as time goes on and as new products and services come along, new demands arise. So you have a workforce to envy, and I think that's very important to keep in mind. Partly because online production of products and services is readily exported outside of the domestic boundary. And that is important if you realize that the world's economy is bigger than any one country. And so if you have the ability to address a global economy with products and services, you have a major opportunity to increase the GDP per capita and not be dependent solely on the health of the economy and of the domestic economy. So something to keep in mind. One thing that I think we would all agree is that capitalizing on the workforce capacity to work in information and communications technology fields will require an internet which is properly configured to serve the needs, which means you have to have broadband capability and it must be available where it's needed in order to support the workforce and to deal with the ancillary requirements of education, for example, and even digital government services to the rest of the public. So the internet infrastructure has to be in place, and where it is not, real efforts are needed in order to bring it to adequate capacity and availability and affordability for everyone who needs access to it, which in my book anyway is everybody. Another thing to keep in mind is that one thing that we should be thoughtful about is this digital single market concept, which is very attractive in the sense of having a relatively unfettered environment in which to develop and offer products and services in the information technology space. But the digital single market in Europe should not be seen as an isolating kind of function. I think it's important to create commonality, but it should also create the opportunity to export out of that digital single market to the rest of the world's economies. So I would urge very strongly that consideration of digital single market be focused primarily on commonality, on common standards, on safety and security, and affordability, but not to inhibit the ability of exchange across that boundary to the rest of the world. I think you would all agree that there are significant upsides to the way in which the internet is being used. It is an enormous source of information. It has tools that is enabling the production of information and its discovery. One can see this benefit coming from scientific progress, for example, medical breakthroughs, growth in the economy, new kinds of jobs that didn't exist before. I mean, if you go back to 1994, there was no such thing as training for being a webmaster. It was something you had to learn to do, you know, with your own hands. Interestingly enough, over time, of course, tools were made to make it easy to create web pages. But the reason that it was possible for people to learn that skill is that the makers of the browsers of the time had a feature in it called Show Source or something equivalent to that, which allowed you to actually see the HTML that was used to create a particularly attractive web page. So you could actually see how that was done, and then you could copy it, you could change it, you could explore variations on it. So people became webmasters by teaching each other. And I think it's very important to keep in mind how powerful that paradigm is, the idea that you learn by doing, that you share your skills, so that everyone gets to advance at a rapid pace because of the sharing of this knowledge. I'm sorry to say, however, that this platform, which is so enabling, also enables some fairly bad behaviors. And I'm sorry to report to you that human beings are not always the positive, fruitful and thoughtful people that we wish we all were. Some of them are not. And so what we see in this online environment is misinformation and disinformation, the spread of malware, denial of service attacks, hacking, fraud, bullying, social divisiveness. There are a variety of bad things that happen in the online environment because it's such a powerful tool that people that don't have your best interest at heart are going to use those tools to do harm. Now, what does that translate into action for you and for me? Well, one thing we have to remember is that most governments are concerned about safety and security of their citizens. And so they see this kind of abusive behavior and they feel that they need to respond to it because their citizens are being harmed. And to make matters worse, the harm can sometimes come across country borders. So, you know, the internet is insensitive to the boundaries of countries. Packets just flow everywhere in the global internet. And so some attacker can be in one country and the victim can be in another country. And so right away we have to think, how are we going to cooperate across those international boundaries in order to protect our citizens from harm. And that's going to require serious cooperation across international boundaries in order to come up with common norms and practices that will help countries protect their citizens. One thing that that I believe is important, however, is to achieve a balanced kind of response to these harms. It's possible to go to an extreme and to try to protect people by suppressing information, by censoring information, by inhibiting access to various websites. And while that might make sense for certain conditions, it certainly should not make sense for every condition. It's very important to keep the internet open, to allow people to explore its content and to generate and share content that they believe is important for other people. It seems to me that what we see is a tension between protecting people's safety using surveillance and other kinds of techniques and protecting their privacy. In theory, these should not have to conflict. Protecting privacy is important, but there are some people who will argue that protection of privacy leads to harm because some people whose privacy is protected will seek to do harm and do so in a way that's private. So we have to find some middle ground where it's possible to give strong protections to people's privacy while at the same time figuring out how law enforcement, especially across international boundaries, can be affected while preserving the important freedoms that we find enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.